Hi, and welcome to Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. I'm Jeremy Wartzman.
And I'm Bianca Bremen.
Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast from the Jackie Winter Group, which is a creative production and representation studio based in Melbourne and New York City. Each week, our two offices come together to celebrate the people and processes that operate behind the scenes to make creative work happen, as well as some of the thoughts and tools that are shaping our industry. While we have a certain focus on advertising, illustration, and animation, the topics and ideas here will be of universal value to anyone who creates anything at all, we hope. This podcast is all about offering a glimpse into the work we do as the bridge between clients and creatives. It's an ongoing exploration of how to wrangle the creative process to achieve excellence no matter what the medium. This week, we're back with another installment of Open Tabs. The segment formerly known as Mini Links is now a companion piece to our ongoing private agency presentations. This week, Bianca and I go rogue without Lara, talking about plagiarism, the dangers of Chrome plugins, and more. But first, Bianca, how are you going?
I'm so well. So it's just the two of us today.
Just the two of us. What's the second line of that?
I have no idea, but Lara just posted on Instagram that they paid $50. She's in Mexico at the moment. Not Mexico, Hawaii. She's living
Hawaii.
She's living her best life in Hawaii.
She's a Mexican in Hawaii.
She is a Mexican in Hawaii. They paid $50 for a Ford Fiesta, but just got upgraded to a Mustang because they ran out.
A few months ago, we launched Open Tabs, a series of events we started holding inside our clients' offices, where we would take four people with us, two Jackie Winter artists and two plain, interesting people. We gave each person 10 minutes to go over 10 of their Open Tabs for 1 minute each, from personally revealing Google search results to private Tumblrs or web app gems. These sessions really brought out some amazing nuggets of insight in an intimate, non-marketing type of event, all helped along by our friends at Sample Brew, who provided all the booze to keep conversation going. Over a dozen events in now, the feedback has been amazing, and we're going to keep it going strong. So if you work at a large agency and interested in hosting one at your office, you can find out more at opentabs.rodeo. But in the meantime, we thought that now that we've really expanded the segment that we have previously called Mini Links for nearly a year now, and it's not so mini after all, we're just going to kind of put that under the Open Tabs banner, which is a bit more appropriate. So I think we're just going to get stuck into it. Bianca, you have chosen a link from the lovely New York Times, which is titled Hipster Culture and Instagram Are Responsible for a Good Thing.
What is that good thing? I mean, that was a bit of a clickbaity title. You actually posted this one for one of our colleagues, Lee. And this is a really nice profile piece on the founder of Colossal Media, Paul Lindell, and kind of how he went from punk skater kid to building a media empire. So if you don't know, Colossal Media are probably one of the biggest now sort of like outdoor hand-painted billboard companies in New York. And I think they've since expanded.
And a media company as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, they own a lot of walls in Brooklyn and Manhattan and apparently 18 or so other cities across the US. So they've kind of taken this archaic and pretty costly craft of hand-painting billboards and turned it into a multi-million dollar business. And I think it's interesting that they're able to offer their staff, who Paul kind of affectionately describes as mostly punk kids and misfits, him being one of them, you know, coming kind of like from a skater boy drama background. I think that's how the profile opens. And, you know, actually being able to offer these sort of tradies that deal kind of in like sign writing and hand painting, and, you know, offer them a pretty healthy salary in kind of like New York terms. And yeah, I think it was also interesting that half of their staff have no traditional art experience, but yet they're, you know, standing on the side of a building, recreating a piece of advertising. And some of it is really like incredible. You know, they do these like really wonderful hand-painted portraits that, you know, look like real life, but you can kind of see the craft behind it. And, you know, that's true. I mean, I've had conversations with, like, I've been in a pub, like, waiting for a friend, and they've been, you know, guys from wearing Colossal hoodies, and I'm like, oh, hey, you work for Colossal, love what they do. And I'm like, oh, how did you get into it? You know, did you study art? And they're like, nah, just kind of like my friend did it. And, you know, I just kind of like went in, and they sort of take you through a bit of an apprenticeship. And yeah, I just think the crux of the article is really how they've kind of been able to take this art form, which, you know, 10, 20 years ago, no one wanted to pay for because it was costly. And, you know, digital was kind of the way that you got media out into an outdoor space, and really being able to make it something that is popular and profitable using social media. So instead of just giving their clients a piece of advertising, which is on the side of a building, they offer their clients time-lapse footage and photos for their clients to share on social media. So they actually kind of like make it, the process of creating the finished product, part of the reason why a client would want to ever even engage with them in the first place.
And I mean, how much of a part of their work is woven into the fabric of living in New York? I mean, do you see them painting actively? Like, do you see lots of their work kind of in existence? What's happening there?
Oh yeah. I mean, they paint on the weekend, they paint in the snow, they paint. I mean, every time I walk through, you know, my area of Bushwick, which is a very heavily, like, there's a lot of graffiti in Bushwick. You know, there's always street art tours happening around Bushwick. They're always painting, and they're always really nice guys. People stop and take photos. It's a huge part of kind of the fabric of New York, and I think that's why it fits in really well. I think most of the time the work that they're painting kind of fits the medium, but every now and again there'll be like a client that will, I guess, commission a wall and the creative doesn't quite fit this sort of hand-painted nature. Like, there was a Facebook campaign about a year ago, which was all like kind of, it was just very heavy vector, like very simple design. There was a few emojis, and because it was such like a sharp kind of piece of communication in terms of the way that it looked, it didn't really, like, there was no benefit from actually hand painting it, whereas something like, you know, a portrait of Kendrick Lamar or whatever it is, like, that's gonna, like, that's more exciting and more interesting to see hand painted. So this is obviously like a very New York thing, and it's something where they're, you know, Colossal have done a really great job of finding the walls to actually paint on and you know, actually selling that as a media. Do you think something like this could work in Australia?
Well, I mean, it is in Australia, and, you know, there is Apparition Media, who kind of established themselves a few years ago here with, you know, very kind of similar, you know, concept, and, you know, to great success as well, with not without controversy, as we have kind of discussed on our previous show. But I think, you know, one thing of just one of the big differences I just think is in just the level of finish that's kind of that Colossal can achieve. I mean, they are true, you know, masters of the craft in that way. I mean, it's amazing how it kind of gets done. And I still don't have my head kind of around it, you know, fully in terms of, if you go to their Instagram, you can kind of see, you know, they create what almost looks like, you know, topographical maps in terms of kind of outlining the contours of something, and then how they kind of fill it and then kind of blend it and work with it from there. I mean, their work from a technical level is absolutely stunning. And I think that they're able to access a talent pool that's much deeper and wider because of the, I guess, culture in America of how kind of art school works as well, in terms of how people, you know, especially if you want to move to commercial art, you know, you do have to get trained in fine art as well. Like, there's always that kind of found, you know, you're doing graphic design, you're still taking foundation, you know, light, color and design, 3D, 2D, life drawing, all that kind of stuff. So I think the culture of kind of craft in that regard is much stronger in the States. And yeah, they've obviously kind of picked up on that. How they've managed to kind of navigate all of the other things that I cannot even begin to think about in terms of the legal issues of a kind of permits, occupational health and safety, all that is mind-bending. So they've obviously put a lot of work into getting the system. And then there's a whole real estate aspect in terms of how do you get the sites, and how do you, you know, they're buying sites, renting sites, et cetera. So it's an amazing kind of business that I think is very close to my heart because of how they're blending kind of art and commerce, and also how they're giving opportunities, as you said, kind of for artists, like, you know, to bring in, you know, income maybe in kind of a different way. So, you know, these are people who might be, you know, some of them might be kind of more craftspeople or, you know, tradespeople. And then there might be kind of creatives as well. But, you know, it's an amazing kind of story. And I guess it just kind of harkens back to the fact that this is just incredibly watchable no matter kind of what. It's just mesmerizing. And, you know, I'm And on one hand, I'm surprised that it kind of lasted so long. Like, I kind of thought, like, okay, you know, clients are just going to be bored of this. It's like, what's the difference between watching someone paint something and what that's like watching something come out of a printer? And like, I like watching things come out of printers, you know? I think there's just something inherently amazing about watching kind of something made, especially, you know, watching something kind of painted and just kind of seeing it come together, especially if it's in your neighborhood. You know, you could kind of see this kind of, it's a story that's kind of evolving over time as well. And so, yeah, I don't see any kind of signs of it going away anytime soon. And like you said, this is not a new thing. I mean, there you have kind of old buildings in Melbourne and New York City of ghost signs, which are kind of, you know, signs that were painted kind of in the 20s or even before, you know, that are now kind of protected, you know, protected under kind of heritage registers and things like that because of how kind of precious they were. The fact that they're doing these paintings and then kind of just kind of they keep kind of going over them is, yeah, it's an amazing ephemeral and, you know, craft-based experience. It just kind of ticks off a lot of boxes. So, yeah, it's great to see them get more mainstream recognition, I think.
I think, as you touched on before, one of the most fascinating things is that this skater punk kid can somehow just navigate the perils of all of those things that you touched on, like permits, like how, you know, like real estate, like that is just so fascinating to me. But I mean, I do have a real soft spot for the skate community. I mean, I grew up with skaters and some of the most creative people I know kind of cut their teeth within that community. So I don't know if there's maybe something for Skater Boys for Life.
Definitely. Well, look, I think if there's any better candidate for the How I Built This podcast from NPR, I think also it would be a great subject. So, or maybe we'll reach out to them. Who knows? Maybe a future episode here. My link of the week is actually kind of somewhat related in a kind of roundabout way. Now, who actually posted this to Slack?
You did. It was me. I think it came from John Maeda on Twitter. He's one of my many sources that I get my kind of like professional development links from.
This was called The Psychology of Cryptomnesia, How We Unconsciously Plagiarize Existing Ideas. And I think this is funny on so many levels. One, because, you know, every time we post a link over here, we're always kind of accusing someone else of kind of, you know, of, I guess, ripping off the other link that someone else kind of put in. And I guess the phenomenon here, cryptomnesia, is the belief that a thought is novel when in fact it is a memory, and how we basically, we plagiarize ourselves and plagiarize kind of other people. I mean, did you have a read through of this?
I loved it. Yeah. It was interesting. It's not anything new. I mean, like, you know, Peter Allen in The Boy from Oz sings everything old is new again. But I think it was interesting to kind of read a little bit further into the psychology behind why the mind is susceptible to this kind of like unconscious process of ripping yourself off. And, you know, there was just more links that I just kind of wanted to keep going into this because, yeah, the article just kept opening up doors to other things.
Yeah, the article is short and, you know, it put many other kind of points there. But I think one of the most interesting things that I always kind of come back to is like when we talk about kind of graphic design, especially, or design, any kind of design, but mostly graphic design, is that, you know, it's very kind of similar to being a hip hop producer or any other kind of music producer. It's like, you know, it's all about kind of sampling. So, you know, you have InDesign or you have your kind of layout and you bring other people's typefaces, other people's illustrations, other people's photography, and you're kind of then putting it together into your own kind of composition. And there's always kind of, I think, now with social media and the fact that images are being kind of proliferated everywhere and they're just kind of sitting in your brain, you know, this whole idea of like, okay, work is now appearing that just by nature of there being so many more creative people and so many more designers out there, there's so much more kind of overlap. And then, you know, there's, you know, what is plagiarism actually, you know, and is it this kind of malicious thing? Is it something that's kind of happening unconsciously? And how does that kind of affect our kind of take on it? And how is it affecting the creative community? I mean, it raises some really, really big questions. And I think, you know, one reason that I kind of thought I was going to bring this up is because there was actually a post of a recent colossal billboard that I started a huge kind of discussion thread on on someone from Facebook, an illustrator that I'm kind of, you know, friendly with and have acquaintances with, and really kind of accusing this artist of ripping off another artist. I'm using kind of very kind of signature styles and using signature elements of composition. And it opens up this huge thing where people are getting kind of publicly shamed as well for kind of ripping people off. And, you know, I've seen it happen both ways. And from my own experience as well, like I have seen some of our artists being kind of very blatantly ripped off. And I have kind of then, you know, in our, you know, trying to fulfill our duty of protecting those artists' kind of moral rights and reputation, have contacted other people and kind of said like, hey, you know, this looks like, you know, really, really similar. And it was always met with that kind of really, really fierce resistance. In some cases where I'm just like, this seems like crazy. Like, you know, I would be making like face by face comparisons, like saying like, surely you can kind of see how this piece is an exact kind of replica, if not like, you know, overly inspired by this piece. And, you know, I just, but like not getting anywhere. It kind of seems like there must be some psychological block here in some ways. And I think this article kind of really addresses that. B, what has been your experience in this? Have you ever kind of come across this in any ways? And how do you kind of put it in context, given the scientific explanation?
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to think of some specific examples last night, but I was struggling a bit. But I mean, it's always like, for me, it's particularly present in music. Like I was thinking about the first time I ever heard Haim or Haim, however you say them, like I couldn't get over how much it sounded like Wilson Phillips. And there's this King Gizzard song that I was listening to on their new album, which sounds so jam bandy that it could be like a Grateful Dead song. And then there's like the new Taylor Swift, which reminds me of old Britney Spears, but it kind of also reminds me of like 1989 Taylor Swift, which is kind of what this like thing. I mean, everything, yes, we are always borrowing from the past. Everything old is new again. We're ripping off each other. But I think what was fascinating to me was through this particular article, it led me to another article on brain picking, which was fascinating. And it was a published excerpt from a letter that Mark Twain wrote to Helen Keller, who was actually accused of plagiarism when one of her short stories was found to be strikingly similar to another short story. And he basically kind of said that there really isn't any, like, basically to live is to plagiarize. That's kind of what the article summed plagiarism as. And that kind of concluded with like a nice quote about Steve Jobs, where he famously proclaimed that creativity is essentially just connecting things, you know, and we're reminded that Jobs didn't actually technically invent any of the things that made him into a cultural icon. He merely perfected them to the point of genius. So I don't know. It's like, I think to directly copy someone is bad.
Even looking at kind of Apple, like, you know, a lot of their products were kind of, yeah, like as you say, like very inspired by those kind of Braun products that were designed by Dieter Rams. And I think you can look at something like the whole, remember with Melania Trump and her speech, like almost a word for word kind of ripoff of Michelle Obama's speech. Did that kind of rise to a level of like WTF at all, like in the States, when that was happening?
Oh, yeah. It was like my entire Twitter feed was just like a side comparison of the two speeches. But I mean, it's safe to say that everything that exists right now is going to somewhat be a product of everything else. How do we stay fresh?
I really don't know. I mean, that's a question I think everyone kind of asks each other every day. And like, you know, whether or not, like, is it a matter, you know, maybe it isn't a matter of staying fresh. It's a matter of kind of perfecting, yeah, like, you know, one element that you're, you know, that you are kind of passionate and good about, but it's also being able to kind of look at your own kind of work critically. But then there's also kind of, yeah, there are kind of legal aspects to it as well. And that's one of the things that kind of came out of this thread that I was following as well, is that I don't know how much we can say about this, but I know that at the Icon Illustration Conference, that this is going to be something that's going to come up in one of the public panels from a potentially very kind of public case, like on, you know, on style and like kind of where style kind of crosses the line into plagiarism and kind of what rights, you know, are afforded to you. And oh my God, this is going to get into, you know, deeper territory when we kind of talk about, you know, all the kind of changes being proposed to copyright and fair use and all that kind of other stuff. So yeah, like I think the whole idea of like, you know, whether the value that we place on originality is going to be the same as it is in kind of, you know, 5-10 years. And, you know, because of all this kind of content that is kind of coming out, it is a bit kind of scary if you start thinking about it a lot. I can't really kind of see the upside of it, like, kind of right now, especially as a business that kind of, you know, that trades in this whole idea of being unique and creating content that is, you know, I guess, like, when you think about kind of branded content, like, you know, being ownable as well.
To have a unique voice, and, you know, to be an artist, to have like a style or something that sets you apart.
And this is why, you know, I suggest a lot, like, that artists especially, you know, try not to spend too much time, you know, looking at peers and looking at your peers' work is great, but also looking at kind of other fields, no matter what you're doing, kind of going apart to make sure that you're getting kind of input from lots of various kind of sources. So, because it's sometimes, and again, I'm not going to say kind of plagiarize, I'm not talking about plagiarism, but, you know, it is about kind of making those kind of connections as well. And I think that's why the work in general is becoming much more interesting to look at, because it's being informed by so many different sources. So I think the work will kind of naturally evolve as long as kind of people are kind of curious and looking outside of their thought bubble, but really having that own kind of self-awareness to kind of understand, you know, how our cognitive biases work in terms of, you know, what, you know, how we kind of work unconsciously and how we plagiarize unconsciously is a real kind of fascinating thing. And I think the more you're aware of it, the more you can kind of, I guess, control it. Without Lara here, I think we wanted just to kind of touch very quickly on a third piece, which I really kind of wanted to pull out, which I thought was really funny that kind of came out of our discussion with Penny Madra as well. You know, Penny was doing a lot of critique on things like, I don't think she mentioned it kind of outright, but plugins, you know, that work with your grammar and that kind of examine it as well. And I thought this was kind of hilarious when it happened that it was a security issue that there's a bug in the app Grammarly that basically could let anyone read everything you wrote online, typos and all, which is just so scary to kind of think about. And this is like a big problem as well with kind of Google Chrome plugins. And I just like, I guess I want to kind of put that out there as a kind of a PSA, because we recommend a lot of kind of plugins here. Like, there are some Chrome plugins I could not live without. There was one the other week that I really wanted to install and recommend, and I forget what it was called. It was called like Neat Gmail or something. And basically what it does is, I don't know if you get this, but it happens to me all the time where you're writing a response in Gmail and all of a sudden the window as you're typing is wider than your browser window and you have to scroll all the way to the right. You've seen that, right?
Yes.
So it's like a bug. Everyone kind of deals with it. So someone kind of made a Chrome plugin that fixed it. And I was like, this is amazing. And I immediately went to the app store. I immediately hit install. And all of a sudden a pop-up came up and said, like, by installing this, you grant this developer complete access to your Gmail, everything that you're writing and reading. I was like, absolutely not. I will not do that. And, you know, that's exactly what happened with Grammarly. Like, you know, like they, you know, you grant access to these developers, even something like Grammarly that looks like a pretty big and, you know, well-funded operation. And then, you know, all of a sudden, massive security hole, someone has access to everything that you're kind of typing. So it's crazy.
I think there's something like that happened with a plugin called Unroll.
The funniest point about that was, the whole point was to get like unsubscribed like to all your newsletters, like, you know, automatically. They were just secretly harvesting your information. So, well, that's another kind of, that goes back to the old adage that if you're not paying for the product, then you are the product. So yes, be very wary of free things in that way. But it does bring me to, there are some Chrome bookmarks I couldn't live without. We talk a lot about the Great Suspender, which we use a lot. Another one that I really love is Honey. Do you use Honey at all?
I do, but I never get any good from it. I never get sent any Honey. Honey, you install, it's a Chrome plugin that basically when you are online shopping, it looks for coupons for you, coupon codes, so free shipping, discounts, but it never actually gives me much reward.
Oh my God, I got like $300 off something the other day.
What?
Made my day. Are there any other plugins that you use that I might not know about or that you...
The number one that I could not live without is a little one called Mercury Reader, which is an extension that removes ads and distractions, which basically if you're reading an article, and this is the only way that I get through the podcast, it kind of like strips everything from your browser window, leaves only the text and images. So that's all I need to focus on is what I'm reading. There's no pop-up ads. There's no I don't know. I respect web designers, but sometimes there's just too much going on. So I really lack the kind of clarity that I get from Mercury Reader.
You know, Safari has that built in reader mode. And another kind of fun fact, like apparently you can bypass most, news sites paywalls by going to a page and putting it into reader mode.
Oh yeah, I do that on my phone all of the time. No, I don't.
The only one in Chrome that I couldn't live without is my Bitmoji. That's kind of where I'm able to, that's where I copy and paste all my Bitmoji from, because Bitmoji is life, and it is it's really the number one way that I feel I can express myself these days, through my Bitmoji. It's really my best friend. Anyway, we will put links to that all on our podcast specific webpage, with all of our show notes at jackiewinter.giveyouthe.biz. You can also sign up to our podcast specific newsletter at tinyletter.com/jackiewinter, which we publish every Friday with all the links that we talk about, as well as the link to download the latest episode. Now, closing out, as we like to do every week, the most Melbourne and most New York thing. Bianca, what is the most New York thing you've seen this week?
Explosions from a manhole.
Is that a band?
It could be, but no. In Williamsburg the other day, like literally fire coming out of a manhole in the middle of the street, like in the middle of Williamsburg. I don't know if it's like gas. So I assume it's gas, but I've never seen that before in my life. And, you know, you see a lot of fog and smoke coming out of a manhole, but I've never seen like a full kind of like 7 foot, 10 foot, 15 foot tall explosion.
That's really scary. For me, it's my birthday on Saturday, and this week is all about my self-care and cashing in my vouchers that I've received over the last kind of 3 years. And so, yeah, I'm getting my deluxe mani and pedi tomorrow, getting a bit of a haircut, but then also going to this new, I don't know, it's not that new, it's almost a year old, but this place called Beyond Rest, which does flotation tanks. Is flotation tanks big in New York at all?
I'm sure it is, but like, I don't know, I've never done it, but what is it?
I don't know. Well, you contributed to it, so you should know. But I'm just going to go. I'm going to float for 60 minutes in a kind of in a little pool, and I'm going to go next door after and get a robotic coffee, which has also been covered in the previous most Melbourne thing of the week. So I'm hitting up two very Melbourne things in one block. Thank you very much, Bianca.
Thanks, Jeremy.
This has been Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast about creative project management and production and just making things happen in general. Our producer is Areej Noor. You can find the Jackie Winter Group on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Jackie Winter. That's Jackie with a Y and Winter like the season. And you can email us with any recommendations, feedback, questions, or comments at podcast@jackiewinter.com. Archives of all of our shows and show notes can be found at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. Our theme music is by Melbourne-based musician Jackie Winter. You can check out his stuff on soundcloud.com/JackieWinter. If you love what you hear, you can help us out by subscribing on iTunes, rating us, and commenting too. Details are on our website at JackieWinter.givesyouthe.biz. Remember to check our Instagram at JackieWinter if you want details on our straight up bribery to rate and review the show in exchange for an A2 art print from Lachlan Kahn. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week. Bye bye. Bye bye. She thinks I'm in the game because I'm out of brain when she hears me sing. And so she holds a flag.